Today, from the data analysis property frontline. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Nera Cosby from REA. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thank you very much for spending some time with us today. And there's a lot to talk about, right, with the Reserve Bank rate cut yesterday and the movements in the property market. So I think there's a really interesting conversation we can have. But I guess a good place to start would be to understand a little bit about REA and realestate.com.au, because quite often I think people don't understand what it is. So can we start there?
Yeah, so REA Group is one of the biggest prop tech companies in the world now. We employ over 1,500 people. We've got a $10 to $12 billion cap, depending on what day it is, market cap. We have grown. We are an Australian growing company. We started in the mid-90s. There was a couple of guys in the tech centre of Australia, East Doncaster, who were fiddling around with a number of ideas they had around online and where it was headed. And one of them was around getting the advertisements from newspapers for homes and posting them up online so people could view them not just in their newspapers but also on the internet. So that was mid-90s. The company has changed dramatically since then. We are primarily a listing portal. So most people on our site do go on to look for homes to buy or rent or share even. But we also have expanded geographically. So we own portals throughout Asia, so Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, a few other countries. We own a share of Realtor.com in the US, so they're a big listing portal in the US, and a share of PropTiger in India. We've also purchased Smartline, which are a mortgage broking business. We've got a home loans business. And then as recently as last year, we purchased a data company called HomeTrack. So HomeTrack are a big provider of automatic valuations for companies. And all of this does is to really strengthen our site and give people more data, more information. And over time, we continue to ramp up the availability of data. It's a really big focus for us.
Yeah, obviously the data-driven approach is, right at the core of what you do. And one of the critical pieces of information that everybody keeps watching is home price data. So the data that's on realestate.com.au, is that your own data or do you pull it in from somewhere else? I mean, how is that actually accumulated and then presented?
Yeah, so we HomeTrack provides us with that data. So that's the main reason we purchased HomeTrack. They were already a very successful business in their own right, but what we wanted to do was to be able to provide our own data on the site. So, whether that ranges from median price data through to automatic valuations of homes across Australia. So anyone can go onto our site, and as long as you log in or, you register, you can actually get an automatic valuation for every property in Australia now. So that's all HomeTrack data. They use the same source that everyone else uses, which is primarily value general data, but they also pull in a lot of our data as well. So we are able to get more up-to-date market statistics, primarily because we rely on the value of general data, which tends to be about 3 months old, but we also add in all the sales data that we get on site to give us a little bit more of an up-to-date representation of the market.
Okay, so that sales data interests me because obviously with the low volumes that are currently going through in terms of, auction clearance rates and transaction throughput, the price data appears to be quite strong. I guess my question is that true or is it actually a function of the more limited volumes and therefore the limited data streams that are coming through?
Oh, absolutely. The volumes has a lot to do with that at the moment. We're not seeing growth in Melbourne and Sydney as yet. So I think some forecast or some creators of indices that are seeing strong growth in Melbourne and Sydney at the moment. We're not. We are still seeing price declines, but we are seeing some suburbs do very, very well. And the suburbs that are doing well tend to be premium suburbs. It's premium Sydney in particular. We are seeing strong growth in places like Fort Clues and Collaroy and Rose Bay, for example. Some strong growth in Gold Coast premium, so which I think is related to Sydney money. We can certainly see search moving from Sydney up to the Gold Coast. So premium markets are doing pretty well. It is pretty... And auction clearance rates, you know, that's another one that tends to be a little bit misleading, because if you have a look at auction numbers and where auctions take place, they are mainly in Sydney and Melbourne, and they're mainly Sydney and Melbourne premium. So, you know, we've got these very high auction clearance rate, these auction clearance rates, but at the same time, if you have a look at a market like Sydney, listing volumes are down 25% compared to the same time last year. So there's a distinct lack of property on the market, which, you know, is one of the key drivers of price growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's very interesting because, of course, the media has been really fixated on the property price movements up in Sydney and Melbourne. You know, the property price indicates that the markets are absolutely bouncing back and this is the great time to buy. And you know, I've said, I think, yeah, but I think there's another side to the story. And it sounds to me as though you've got a much more balanced view as to what's really going on at the moment.
Yeah, look, I think the point is that, you know, when we have a look, when we talk about a downturn in Australia, it was Sydney and Melbourne. You know, if you look at markets like Hobart and Geelong, they've seen some of the strongest growth they've seen in decades. So, you know, the market downturn was finance-led. It hit Melbourne and Sydney very hard. Finance restrictions are slowly easing up. Interest rates have come down. We've had a change of government. And we can actually, you know, I'm saying this because theoretically I think that's what happened, but we actually saw it in search that the end of the federal election result led to a jump in search in Melbourne and Sydney. It didn't lead to a jump in search anywhere else. The same thing with the interest rate cuts. They led to a jump in Melbourne and Sydney, but they haven't led to a jump anywhere else. So it is, you know, we do talk a lot about national downturns and we talk about, you know, the Australian market as a whole, but the reality is that, you know, while Hobart was roaring ahead and seeing its strongest conditions ever, Sydney was seeing this, you know, quite sharp downturn that was creating a lot of problems for people in Sydney.
Right. And I think that's very important to understand, right? Because I've continued to say that we need to get granular to really understand what's going on. And my survey data indicates, yeah, there are some significant hotspots where prices are up. And you say, I agree, top end of the market. But if you look over in the western suburbs, if you look on the new estates that are being built and those sorts of things, seems to be a very different story there. And if you look in the high-rise sector, that looks pretty wobbly too, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, the high-rise sector in Sydney is it's very tough. You know, when we talk about somewhere like Parramatta at the moment in terms of rental demand, views per listing, it's actually one of the lowest in Australia. So, you know, there's not only a problem with quality, which needs to be resolved pretty quickly, I think, for the development industry, but, you know, we also have problems that, you know, on one hand, you may have a quality issue in your tower, but you're probably struggling to find a tenant, not because of the quality, but just because there's just so much stock available. So, you know, I think you're right. Like, I think, you know, house and land is one of those parts of the market that people generally can't expect to see strong price growth over the short term. You know, I think anytime you buy brand new, it's like buying a brand new car that, it's, you know, it depreciates quite quickly and, well, a car never really appreciates unless you keep it for, say, 30, 40 years. But, you know, with housing, it's always a long-term game. You know, it's not a sector that does well trying to buy and sell quickly no matter what you buy. But I think for brand-new properties, it does take a while to see some pretty decent capital growth.
Well, of course, quite a lot of the time, those new properties have, you know, shiny new kitchens and all the trimmings, as it were, but they do command a premium. Although I noticed that quite a few developers now are discounting very heavily to try and shift stuff, and the stock of newly completed units in a lot of the high-rise areas look as though they've gone through the roof.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see that because I know, you know, when the market was red hot in Sydney, you know, I'd be talking to Sydney developers and, you know, they'd be very, very buoyant. But at the same time, if I, you know, went to Perth the next week and we're talking to house and land developers there when they were, you know, 3-4 years into a downturn, you know, they were constantly trying to create market activity and, you know, one bit of bad news could completely destroy one sale, which was a very, very big deal for them. But it really hasn't improved in Perth yet, but definitely in Sydney, you know, it is a vastly different situation to where we were a couple of years ago.
Okay. Well, let's go around the regions in a bit more detail. And let's start over in the West, because that's an area that I've been studying for quite some time. And we know there that in some postcodes, prices are down 30% from where they were. Mandra is one that I keep picking on, unfortunately, because it's a very good example of, you know, the bottom end of what's happening over in Perth. There are some better hot spots, I think, as well, closer into the city. But what's your perspective on Perth over the next few months?
Yeah, well, Perth is now 5 years into a downturn. It's been a, you know, very, very tough market. You know, what we're seeing is, and we've been seeing this for quite some time, that activity in premium Perth is pretty good, and there's pretty good rental demand. If you go to somewhere like Cottesloe or Shenton Park or, you know, even Peppermint Grove, you know, that's the most premium suburb in Perth. Rental demand's very good. We're seeing price growth in those areas. What seems to be the sticking point at the moment for Perth is taking a while for that growth to kind of ripple through to other parts of the market. On the fringe, though, there's a lot of structural problems on the fringe, which I actually don't know how they're going to unravel it. And the problem is that there were a lot of people that bought at very quite elevated prices during the mining boom. Quite young, you know, often quite young people. You do find that house and land is a focus for young people, and they bought house and land on the fringe. They were earning very, very high incomes, took on pretty big debts. Obviously, the downturn happened. Their homes lost a lot of value. They ended up owing more money than their homes were worth, and as a result, that creates distress, but also their incomes dropped as well. So, you know, on a property that was quite easy to pay off, they started to find it quite difficult. So that's one problem. The other problem is that to try and keep the economy going, there were a lot of incentives for development to continue to occur. So on one hand, you had an individual who owned a property that lost value, they'd lost their income, but then cheaper homes, cheaper and newer homes that were possibly even better than the existing homes were starting to be built, you know, down the road. So you know, you've created a, you know, I guess a feeling of unfairness for these people, but also quite a stressful situation for them as well. And it's interesting looking at the data that comes out occasionally from banks into people that are, you know, delayed on their home loan repayments, that the majority of it still seems to be in Perth. And if you took it down to a, you know, a suburb level, it would be fringe Perth that is the area of, you know, the problem area at the moment.
Yeah, well, the 90-day defaults are certainly up over in the West. And, you know, they're saying around 2.93% overall. But if you look in some of those postcodes where, as you say, the fringe postcodes, it's 7, 8, 9% of people now behind with their mortgages. And that's an unsustainable story, I think, in terms of, as you say, trying to unwind it. It really is a very sticky, difficult problem. And many households are registering as stressed and, you know, the social consequence as well. And I guess that's an important warning for, you know, for other parts of Australia who, you know, perhaps haven't ever thought through the implications of a significant property downturn. You know, Perth is, I guess, in one way, perhaps a leading indicator, perhaps a unique situation. But then if you come across to a New South Wales and you look at the urban fringe there, there are some early signs of also stress from our data in those urban fringes too. So I'm thinking of, you know, Liverpool, Campbelltown, some of those areas, or the regional centres like Wollongong and Newcastle. Looks to me as though we've got some early signs of difficulty there too.
Yeah, it will be interesting. You know, I think I can't see the New South Wales economy tanking in the same way the WA economy did. So I think as long as, you know, there's always that, there's on one hand there's high levels of housing distress, but then for it to get to, you know, a Perth type situation where people are, you know, delayed on repayments or defaulting on loans, you know, that is an extra step. And I can't really see it in New South Wales happening to a large degree. We're not seeing it on our site. You know, if we have a look at one of the things, you know, the misconception, I think, is that for realestate.com.au that, you know, we're always talking at the market because it's good for our business. And the reality is if we wanted to increase listings, you know, we'd be constantly talking it down because people, you know, the best situation for listings is high levels of distress that, you know, ultimately people are selling because they can't afford to pay them, then listing volumes jump up. So you know, I don't think New South Wales will be hit the same way as WA. But, you know, it is hard to predict because, you know, who, if you have a look at, you know, if Australia goes into recession, which, you know, again, is still, it's, you know, it's, we're not that close to that yet. But if you have a look at the last recession, which was the early 90s, that's when Melbourne really hit the wall and, you know, prices tumbled quickly and people lost their jobs and there was a lot of distress and very high unemployment. So, you know, these things can happen. But at this stage, I think, you know, besides from Perth and Darwin, which is also problematic, I think places like Adelaide, Hobart, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Gold Coast, you know, I think they're okay at this stage.
Okay. What about Canberra? Because I noticed in the latest building approvals that the, you know, proportion of units that were approved over the last few years have gone through the roof in Canberra until quite recently. And I'm wondering what's happening in Canberra because it's just something funny from the data that I'm seeing.
I agree. When I look at Canberra data, I'm just often surprised at price growth for a start. That, you know, when you look at what happened in Melbourne and Sydney over the past 2 years, Canberra just kept growing in terms of pricing. It is a city that just keeps building, which doesn't make sense in terms of price growth. It's not a city that you would expect to see strong population growth or jobs growth given it's a government-run town. But I don't know, the market, they keep building, they keep seeing price growth. You know, we see very, I mean, one thing we do see, which is quite unusual, we see very, very high rental demand in Canberra, which makes sense. You know, it is a city that people tend to, you know, not necessarily stay for the long term. So that's possibly a factor. But, yeah, I agree. It is a harder market to understand and a very small market too. You know, if you have a look at the number of people that live in Canberra, it's not much bigger than, you know, many kind of regional towns. So it's, it is an interesting one and a puzzling one. It's probably the one that puzzles me the most.
Yeah, and I suspect part of the answer there is that it's public sector salaries, which are growing quite a lot faster than private sector salaries, and the average wage is actually quite a lot higher in Canberra simply because of the mix of employment there. So in a way, you could argue that Canberra may be a bit insulated from some of the broader forces across the rest of the economy, and that may be a bad thing because maybe politicians therefore get a rather one-sided view as to what's really going on in the property market as a result.
Yeah, I think that would definitely explain the price growth a bit. I can't understand the construction volumes, which unless all these public servants are buying a lot of investment properties, which, you know, could be the case, I'm not sure. But, yeah, the construction volumes are quite interesting. We see interesting search to, you know, every capital city, the places that, you know, people do tend to like inner suburban areas in most cities, you know, generally, not always, but generally that seems to be the case that the inner suburban areas see higher demand. But Canberra doesn't see that. You know, we've got this very dispersed, it's very north side. You know, definitely people seem to prefer the north to the south, which I guess if you're in Canberra, you know why. But yeah, the demand can, you know, we can often see quite sort of middle or outer suburbs seeing very, very high views per listing, which again is quite puzzling from a researcher's perspective.
Okay, very interesting. Now, as we sort of come towards the end of our conversation, there's two areas I'd like to explore just before we close off. The first is international search, because obviously your site is available to prospective purchasers in Australia and internationally. What are you seeing in terms of international interest in the Australian property market at the moment?
Yeah, so I just looked at the September data for that this morning, and it is interesting. Like, China is well down. So, you know, if there's any media reports about people saying Chinese buyers are back, it's not true. You know, we see massive volumes coming out of all countries, and when China was red hot, when Chinese buyers were red hot in Australia, you know, that was well and truly an area that we were seeing very, very strong growth. So Chinese buyer activity is, you know, I don't know, it's probably 60-70% down from peak. So they're not transacting. We can see it through FIRB data. but they're not even really searching. So that's key. But the, on the other hand, very, very strong search from Hong Kong. So that, you know, related to political issues there. We have very strong search from the UK at the moment. So, again, political. It's died off a little bit. Not died off. It's kind of flattened out a little bit, which is interesting. And then New Zealand, which I think might be economic related. Not, it wouldn't be political, so I think it might be economic. So that's interesting. And then a few regional differences, like Indian property seekers in Brisbane, for example. So I think that's quite interesting in that, in, particularly for the house and land space, in that we know in Melbourne and Sydney, Indian-born buyers were a big component of house and land transactions. You know, they would often see, you know, whole blocks being purchased by family and friends and, you know, creating community. And that seems to be happening in Brisbane at the moment. So, you know, that's a key trend. And then Perth is seeing lots of activity out of the UK at the moment. So, don't know why. Maybe, I don't know.
Brexit?
It's Brexit, obviously. But, you know, why Perth? I don't know, maybe closer. That direct Qantas flight, I don't know, but it's certainly very, you know, places like Fremantle see very, very high volumes from people from the UK.
That's very interesting, yeah, okay. And then my other question relates to the broader monetary policy. Now, the Reserve Bank cut yesterday. Both the Treasurer and the Prime Minister have been basically talking up the property market, and you can understand why, because basically that's been the growth engine for the last decade, really, you know, once the mining boom faded. I guess my question is, what's your perspective in terms of where Australia is from an economic perspective? And how successful do you think the drive to get credit up and therefore get the property market restarted is going to work? And will it really turn the economy around, or have we got more structural issues to deal with?
Yeah, monetary policy is not the answer. I think that's pretty clear that we can't just keep cutting rates and not do anything else and expect the economy to return. What we don't want is another boom in premium suburbs in Melbourne and Sydney. What we want is construction, which is the big employer when it comes to property. So, you know, I sit on the Construction Forecasting Council, and one of the things that has been the saviour for the construction industry has been that we've moved from construction of apartments and houses to construction of infrastructure. But that went, and if we don't start construction of houses again, then you know, the construction industry really gets stuck out. The other issue, though, is longer term, that if we don't, you know, Australia's population keeps growing, and if we don't produce enough housing, that is, you know, ultimately one of the big drivers of very, very strong price growth, and not just price growth for houses, but also for rental levels as well. So, you know, supply plays such a key issue. I think broadly, though, for the Australian economy, I mean, a lot of it this time round, it's very much out of our hands. You know, if you have a look at what caused the downturn in housing in Sydney and Melbourne over the last 2 years, it was driven by government-imposed credit restrictions. So, you know, when people were talking about the worst downturn ever, I couldn't help but think it's not, for a start, it's not the worst downturn ever, but also, the government can switch it back on. You know, there's things that they can do in terms of availability of credit and interest rates to get people back into the market. This time around, if the global economy, you know, really starts to shut down, and China in particular really starts to shut down, then if we start to see rising unemployment, then there's very little that the government can do in terms of, you know, trying to stimulate the local economy. Well, they can do a lot to stimulate the local economy, but trying to offset those global influences that, you know, they're pretty much out of control. So I think, you know, at the moment, you know, definitely we're in a housing recovery. The interest rates are helping. Eventually we'll get that ripple effect into other parts of the market. But the big risk is unemployment. If that starts to rise, and which it is rising, but it's not, you know, at terrible levels, but if we do start to see quite a dramatic rise in unemployment, then it will be quite problematic.
Indeed. Well, you know, there are lots of international forces at play, and I always think of Australia's economy as a little cork on the water, you know, being swept around with where things go internationally. I guess the other point that seems to me coming through from what I'm seeing in my data is that people's levels of confidence are pretty negative at the moment. You know, households are not spending, and with households not spending, that's 50% of the economy, but businesses aren't investing either because of the fact that they're really unclear about the future trajectory of the economy, both here and internationally. So in a way, trying to bet the future of the economy on the housing market in this environment looks to me to be, you know, rather fraught and rather risky. It's also quite interesting, I don't know whether you saw this, but one of the feds in the US published a report quite recently that highlighted the fact that the reason we haven't had a recession for 28 years in Australia is because of population growth, right? Because essentially on a total growth perspective, you know, we got bigger, which means we don't actually, you know, technically have a recession. But if you look on a GDP per capita basis, we've actually had three over that period, right? And we're in one now. So in a way, that highlights to me, I think, some more fundamental structural issues in the economy here.
I mean, fundamentally, what drives property is supply and demand, you know, population growth and number of dwellings constructed. So, you know, I think that's key. I think the other thing that's key is that we did get through the GFC because we had a mining boom. You know, we don't have a mining boom this time. I mean, the mining sector does seem to be picking up, but, you know, it's certainly not roaring ahead like it did back in 2008, 2009. So I think, you know, that's a problem. I think for construction is also a problem that if you have a look at Melbourne, what really got Melbourne building again post-GFC was the fact that a lot of developers tapped into that Chinese demand. So, again, we don't have that. So, you know, there's a lot of structural differences this time around which will make things very, very different.
Very interesting. Well, look, I thank you for your time today. That's been really interesting. And, you know, if you're up for it, I wouldn't mind doing this again down the track, because I think that your perspective from the data that you've got is considerably more balanced than some of the other commentators out there. But also you've put your finger on, I think, a number of really critical points. So many thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for that.
Okay, no worries.